I'd like to discuss a sugya that comes up in Masechet Megillah, which until very recently for most people in the world, until fairly recently historically, was of, in almost all places, was of purely theoretical interest. Here in England remains of theoretical interest, but in Eretz Yisrael is actually really very relevant halakha lemaaseh. And those are the laws that relate to what's called Shushan Purim. Right? The fact that we know that in theory, there's not only in theory, in practice, there are two different days that are observed as Purim. Most of the world observes Purim on the 14th of Adar, or in this case of Adar Sheni, which comes out this year, 2 weeks from this coming Thursday, Bezrat Hashem. But in cities that had a wall around them, which certainly means Yerushalayim, there's a whole discussion whether there are other cities perhaps in Eretz Yisrael and maybe even in other parts of the world. But bottom line is primarily it's Yerushalayim that does so, observes Purim instead on the 15th. In other words, that'll be 2 weeks from Friday. And that, there's a number of halachic issues that are raised by that. I'd like to discuss primarily one of them. But let's just first understand where this very strange concept comes from. It's quite unique. It's quite unique that we have a mitzvah that's to be observed differently in different places. And that's sort of built into the halakha, that's the way it's supposed to be. So let's just read here very quickly the psukim in Megillat Esther that discuss both the historical background of this and the halachic basis for this concept. It says here, so we're now in the ninth chapter of Megillat Esther, near the end. This is after Haman and his 10 sons have already been executed. And then there was a war with permission. And it says that that the Yehudim rose up and were able to attack and defeat their enemies. Vayomer HaMelech l'Ester HaMalka b'Shushan HaBira haragu HaYehudim v'abeid 500 ish v'taseret b'nei Haman b'shar medinot HaMelech me'asu. This is after, this is on the 15th of Adar. The day after, they were told that they were allowed to fight, I'm sorry, this is on the 14th of Adar. They were allowed to fight on the 13th. That's the day that we observe as Tanit Esther. And then on the 14th, they rested, and they knew that in Shushan, they had killed 500 of their enemies, plus Aseret B'nai Haman, so I guess 510 people. And he says, who knows what happened in the rest of the empire? In those days, they didn't have instant communication. They didn't yet have the number. We'll see what the number was in a minute when the reports came back. But he says, probably they were very successful in other places also, and they can rest comfortably now because they've defeated their enemies. But what else do you want? Esther was asking for something else. Vatomer Esther malamelach tov yinatein gam machar layehudim asher b'shushan lasot kedat hayom. I'd like one more day for the Jews of Shushan. That's what she requested. They were given originally a one-day dispensation to fight their enemies on the 13th of Adar, and they managed to kill 500 in Shushan. She says, I'd like another day. But Yomar Melech lehe asot kein, he gave her permission. Vayikalu ha-Yehudim asher b'shushan. I'm in the second bolded pasuk now. Vayikalu ha-Yehudim asher b'shushan gam b'yom arba'asa l'chodesh Adar. Vayahargu b'shushan shlosh me'ot ish. Uvabizah lo shalchu et yadam. They killed another 300 on the following day. Usha'ar ha-Yehudim. And now we get the summary after the after all the information came in. Usha'ar ha-Yehudim asher b'medinot ha-melech nikalu v'amod al nafsham v'noach bo'i v'hem harog b'sonehem chamisha v'shivim elef uvabizah lo shachu et yadam. We now find out that in the total around the empire, they killed a total of 75,000 of their enemies. If I have time at the end, I'll tell you a little Dvar Torah to sum up with that, if I have time. But for now, let's just look at the halachic ramifications here. So it comes out like this. In the rest of the empire, they killed 75,000 of their enemies. B'yom shlosha asar l'chodesh Adar. V'noach b'arba asabo. V'asal to yom mishteh v'simcha. So in all 127 provinces, with the exception of Shushan, they fought a war on the 13th. They defeated their enemies, ultimately 75,000 of them in total. And then on the 14th, they celebrated the victory, and they made it a day of celebration and praise to God. But v'hayudim asher b'shushan nikalu b'shlosha sarbo uvi arba sarbo v'noach b'chamisha sarbo v'asal to yom mishteh b'simcha. But the Jews in Shushan didn't celebrate on the 14th like everyone else did, because they were fighting for a second day. They fought a war for 2 days, on the 13th and on the 14th. And then they celebrated on the 15th. That's a historical fact. That's what happened the first year. And one might have assumed, okay, fine, That's what happened. But now when we're going to commemorate it in the future, we'll pick one day. But for some reason, that's not what was decided. And the Megillah says, and look at the wording of this pasuk, because we're going to see in a minute it's significant halachically. Al kein ha-Yehudim ha-Prazim ha-Yoshvim ba-Arei ha-Prazot osim et yom arba asar l'chodesh adar simcha u-mishteh v'yom tov mishloach manot ish l'reyehu. Al kein ha-Yehudim ha-Prazim ha-Yoshvim ba-Arei ha-Prazot, which I guess I can translate as those unwalled Jews. That's what it says. Who live in unwalled cities. That's a strange expression. The unwalled Jews, Yudim HaPrazim, Hayoshvim Barei HaPrazot, who live in the unwalled cities, they do it on the 14th of Adar. And then it tells us, Vayiftov Mordechai, Tadvarim Eile, etc. They sent letters around. The next bolded pasuk, Lekayem Aleihem La'asol, Liotosim, Et Yom Arbasa Lechodesh Adar, Ve'et Yom Chamisha Asabo, B'chol Shana V'shana. Ultimately, Mordechai made a decree and sent letters out that every year we have to observe both the 14th and the 15th. Kayamim Asher Nachu Bahem HaYehudim HaYovahem, V'chodesh Shishinapach HaMiyagom V'simcha, etc. And therefore we know that there has to be 2 days. Again, why they did that, maybe I'll share an idea at the end. But the bottom line is, that was the decision. There's a mitzvah to observe both of these days. The Yudim HaPrazim HaYoshvim Ba'arei HaPrazot, those unwalled Jews in the unwalled cities, they observe the mitzvot on the 14th, but we keep both days, and therefore the people in the walled cities on the 15th. And so says the Mishnah Masechet Megillah, Krachin, that's the halachic term, Krachim, which means large cities, Hamukafim Choma Mimot Yoshua Binun, if they were surrounded by a wall from the days of Yoshua Binun. And the Gemara discusses why that is. One might have thought that it should be determined by the time of Achashverosh, but it's not, in order to give honor to Eretz Yisrael, which was in ruins at this time. Any city surrounded by a wall at the time of Yoshua Binun keeps it on the 15th, and every place else on the 14th. And again, today, although there's discussions of many cities, and there are some people in some cities who observe Purim 2 days misafek, but the only place that really, as far as I know, an entire city that observes Purim on the 15th and not on the 14th is Yerushalayim. I'm not sure it should be that way. My tour guide perspective, I have a certain, there's a number of other places that I seems to me that I think maybe they should be celebrating it on the 15th, because we see the places we've excavated and found walls, like in Beit Shemesh, for example. I'm not sure why they don't. But the rabbis apparently don't feel that they should. So whatever it is. Bottom line is, Yerushalayim. Okay, now there's a lot of halakhic questions that comes up. Exactly where is Yerushalayim? What are the boundaries and all sorts of other things? I want to focus on one fascinating issue, which is the following. Let's take a look at the Mishnah and the third source on the page. The Mishnah talks about, Ben ir shahalach lekrach, uben krach shahalach la'ir. Okay, let's talk about two cities, Yerushalayim and Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is an unwalled city, certainly at the time of Yoshua bin Nun. And therefore, Tel Aviv observes it on the 14th. Yerushalayim is a walled city and observes it on the 15th. So if you have a person who lives in Yerushalayim and you have someone else who lives in Tel Aviv, and they all stay in their home on both days, the whole time, and there's no problem. So obviously, the guy in Tel Aviv observes it on the 14th, and the guy in Yerushalayim observes it on the 15th. But what if either or both of these individuals finds himself traveling? What if the guy from Tel Aviv goes to Yerushalayim, or the guy from Yerushalayim goes to Tel Aviv? What happens then? So the Mishnah says, Ben ir shahalach lekrach, that's the guy from Tel Aviv, the ir is the unwalled city, the krach is the walled city. The guy from Tel Aviv who goes to Yerushalayim, uven krach shalach leir, or the guy from Yerushalayim goes to Tel Aviv, im atid lachzor limkomo, if he's ultimately going to go back to his own place, Korei Kim Komo, then he reads like his own place. V'im la, but if not, Korei Imahen. If not, he reads with them. One could have read that Mishnah to mean that if one of these people permanently moves house, right? The guy from Tel Aviv, he grew up in Tel Aviv his whole life. One day he decides, I'm moving to Yerushalayim, buys a house and moves to Yerushalayim. So then, he's Yerushalmi, even though he his whole life lived in Tel Aviv, but now he's Yerushalmi, and vice versa as well. That's if he plans to stay. But if he plans to go back home, one might have thought, even if he's traveling to Yerushalayim for 2 weeks, let's say, But then he's going back home. He happens to be in Yerushalayim over Purim, but he's really a Ben Ir. He lives in Tel Aviv. He's a house in Tel Aviv. He's in Yerushalayim only for a few days, for a week, whatever. One might have thought that it means, it's because it says, if he's going to go back home, he reads like his place. We might have thought that. Similar, perhaps, to what the halacha probably is regarding B'nai Chutz La'aretz who find themselves in Eretz Yisrael for Yom Tov. Well, there's a discussion about it, but at least according to many poskim, as I'm sure everyone knows, right? If a person travels temporarily to Eretz Yisrael, he has to still keep 2 days of Yom Tov, as opposed to if he moves there, right? So one might have thought that that's what's going on here. But the Gemara says, no, that's not what it means. Amar Rava, what did it say in the Mishnah? It said, if he's going to go back home, he reads like his hometown. But if he doesn't, then he reads like the people where he is. The Gemara says, Amar Rava, lo shanu. Rava says, this was only stated, she'atid lachzor b'leile arbasar. If he's going to go back home that night. Aval ein atid lachzor b'leile arbasar korei mahem. So let's talk about the Yerushalmi, right? Someone lives in Yerushalayim 2 weeks from now on Wednesday night, which is Purim. He has something to do in Tel Aviv. So he gets into his car on Tanit Esther, let's say, and he drives to Tel Aviv. He gets to Tel Aviv, and everyone's reading the Megillah. But he's got a meeting. I don't know what he's got there. And then at 11 o'clock at night, he's planning to go back home. So that's when Rava says he doesn't read the Megillah with them. Because he's only here now. But, Eino atid lachzor b'leile arbasar. But if he's not planning to, he didn't move to Tel Aviv. But he's planning to sleep over. He goes there on Wednesday night, and Thursday afternoon he's planning to go home. Still, he was there on the morning of the 14th. That's when he has to keep Purim with the people in Tel Aviv. That's what Rava says. When the Mishnah says he reads like his own hometown if he's planning to go back, it doesn't mean if he's ever planning to go back like we might have thought. It means if he's planning to go back that night. If on the night of the 14th, he's going back home. So he goes to Tel Aviv for a few hours. But while it's still dark, he goes back home. And when he wakes up the next morning or when the sun comes up the next morning, he's already back home in Yerushalayim. Then he doesn't have to read the Megillah. So he's in Tel Aviv and everyone's going to shul and he doesn't have to go because at 11 o'clock he's going back home. But if he's planning to stay over till tomorrow, then he has to read it in Tel Aviv. Amar Rava mina amin alach. How do I know that? Because of that strange pasuk that we read a few minutes ago, says Rabbi. Dichtiv. Al kein ha-yehudim ha-prazim ha-yoshvim ba'arei ha-prazot. What a strange expression. Those unwalled Jews, meaning people who lived in unwalled cities, who live in the unwalled cities. It's redundant. Michdi says the Gemara. Ketiv ha-yehudim ha-prazim. You already said the people who don't have walls around them. Lamali le-michtav ha-yoshvim ba'arei ha-prazot. That are dwelling in the unwalled cities. Hakamashmalam de paruz ben yomo nikra paruz. The purpose of that extra phrase, hayoshvim ba'areya prazot, if they are living in the unwalled cities, means if you're living there, it doesn't matter for how long. Yoshvim, you're sitting there, you're dwelling there temporarily, paruz ben yomo, you're there even for one day, that's enough. That's how Rava learns this halacha, and then he says the same thing works in the opposite direction. Therefore, according to the Gemara, if you go from Yerushalayim to Tel Aviv at night and plan to return at night, then you don't have to read the Megillah in Tel Aviv. But if you go there at night and plan to stay over till the next morning, even though you live in Yerushalayim, then you have to hear the Megillah on the 14th in Tel Aviv. So says the Gemara, Ad Kan. Now that's it, right? We understand the halacha. No problems, right? Except there are. Because there's several questions that can be raised. And the first of which is, Rava told us what's the halacha regarding a person going from Yerushalayim to Tel Aviv. And he said, it all matters whether he's planning to stay over till the morning of the 14th or not. But Rava didn't explicitly say what happens in the other direction. The guy from Tel Aviv who goes to Yerushalayim that same night, on the night of the 14th. What happens to him? And there are at least two ways to understand Rava. Let's take a look at the next source on the sheet, the Rush. The Rush begins by quoting Rashi. Look at the bolded part at the end of the first line. He writes, Peirush Rashi. Dekai aben ir, aben krach shalach le'ir. Rashi says, that Rava said what he said only in relation to the Ben Krach, the Yerushalmi, who's going to Tel Aviv. For him, the crucial question is, are you planning to come back home tonight? Before the sun comes up tomorrow morning? If so, then you don't have to do what the Tel Aviv people do. You're back in Yerushalayim by nighttime, you do what the Yerushalmim do. But if you plan to stay over till the morning, then you have to hear the Megillah already at night, because you're going to be a Paruz Ben Yomo, you're considered a Tel Avivi. But what about the guy in the other direction? That Rava didn't specifically say. And he says, I'll skip to the next bolded part. V'hu Hadini says, Rava didn't tell us, but we can extrapolate, says Rashi. Ben Ir Shalach Lekrach, Ve'eno Atid Latzeit Misham Belele Tetvav. Shehu bekrach kesheheir hayom havalei mukaf yom v'kori b'leil tedvav uviyom tedvav. Says Rashi, when Rava said that the determining factor is where you're going to be on the morning of the 14th, he was talking about someone who, although he generally lives in Yerushalayim, he does live in Yerushalayim, and in principle he's a Yerushalmi, he's a mukaf by the Talmudic terminology. Right? He's a Jew who lives in a city surrounded by a wall. But since this year, on this day, he's in the unwalled city on the morning of the 14th when the sun comes up, which seems to be the determining time, then he is considered Paruz Ben Yomo and he has to observe Purim that day. But if it's the opposite, if it's a guy who's going from Tel Aviv to Yerushalayim, the way Rashi understands the Gemara, it's a similar concept, but the question is not, where is he going to be on the morning of the 14th? But rather, is he planning to stay all the way till the 15th? The guy who goes from Tel Aviv to Yerushalayim on Wednesday night, we don't ask him, according to Rashi, are you planning to go home before tomorrow morning? We ask him, are you planning to go home before Friday morning? If you're planning to go, he says, oh, I'm in Yerushalayim now till Sunday. Ah, then, just like the other guy who went to Tel Aviv, he's going to be in Tel Aviv on the morning of Purim in Tel Aviv. So he has to read the Megillah with the Tel Aviv people. If you're planning to stay all the way till the 15th, you're planning to be in Yerushalayim when they read Megillah in Yerushalayim, then you'll read with the Yerushalayim. But if not, then you're not going to read with the Yerushalayim. That's how Rashi understands the Gemara. And the Rash explains why Rashi said that. Let's keep reading. Because there is another potential way to read the Gemara. What else could one have said? Rava said that the Mishnah, which says that the question is, are you planning to go home or not, is discussing, are you planning to go home or not before the morning of the 14th? He didn't say that he was talking only about the Jew going from Yerushalayim to Tel Aviv. And not the other way. One could have said that in both cases, the question is, where are you going to be on Thursday morning, on the morning of the 14th? That's what Rava sounds like he's saying when you read it simply. But Rashi didn't want to explain it that way. Why? In other words, we could tell the Tel Avivi, are you planning to stay in Yerushalayim until tomorrow morning on the 14th? If you are, then you have to read on the 15th like the Yerushalmi. But if you're going back to Tel Aviv tonight, then not. One could have explained it that way, but Rashi apparently thought that would make no sense. Why? He didn't want to explain it that way. Because it makes no sense. Lemeimar to say, that if you're in Yerushalayim on the 14th, when they're not observing Purim, shechala alav chovat kriyat mukafim, v'yishayer sham yom tetvav, v'yikarei mahem. Or after that, da'adayin lo yigi zman kriyat mukafim, lama tachul alav chovat kriyatan. Zehu sfarat Rashi. Rashi says, it can't be that being in Yerushalayim in the morning of the 14th, when it's not Purim in Yerushalayim, would give you an obligation to read Purim, like to read the Megillah like Yerushalmi. That makes no sense. It must be that the question is, if you're in the city, when Purim is observed in that city, that's what gives you the obligation. So when Rava said, the question is, are you going to stay over till the morning of the 14th, or are you going to stay home, be back home ready by the morning of the 14th? He was talking about if you left Yerushalayim and went to Tel Aviv. Then the question is, are you staying over till tomorrow morning when it's Purim in Tel Aviv? So then you have to read the Megillah in Tel Aviv. But if you're going back home at night, and by the morning you'll be back in Yerushalayim, you don't have to read the Megillah in Tel Aviv. But if it's the other way, we would ask him, are you going to still be in Yerushalayim when it's Purim in Yerushalayim? That makes sense. If you're planning to stay in Yerushalayim all the way till Friday morning, so then you are a Yerushalmi this year. So that's how Rashi says. But even though Rav didn't say that, Rav didn't say it matters where you are in the 15th, he said the 14th. Rashi says Rav was talking about one case, and the other case, it's the same basic concept. But says the Rush. So that's how Rashi understands it. But the Rush says, but that's not correct. That's, he says, Zehu Svarat Rashi. That's how Rashi understands it. Mihu, but however, Lishna de Hashas, the language of the Gemara, Mashma, de Rava Ka'i Akula Matnitin. The language makes it sound like Rav is talking about the whole thing. And also the Yerushalmi, which maybe we'll talk about in a few minutes, seems to understand that. And he says, therefore, I think that Rava should be understood exactly like what he says. In both cases, the question is not where are you going to be on Friday morning the 15th, but where are you going to be on Thursday morning the 14th, including the guy from Tel Aviv. And the Rush says, if a guy leaves Tel Aviv on Wednesday night and goes to Yerushalayim with intention to stay in Yerushalayim until Thursday, okay? So he's in Yerushalayim on Thursday when it's not Purim in Yerushalayim. And then he wakes up in Yerushalayim on Thursday and goes back to Tel Aviv. And by Thursday night, when Purim's over in Tel Aviv and they're starting to celebrate Yerushalayim, he's back in Tel Aviv, says the Rush, he has to observe Purim in Tel Aviv on Friday. Like a Yerushalayim. What? By himself. Which Rashi would say makes absolutely no sense. Why should being in Yerushalayim on a day that's not Purim make you obligated in Purim like Yerushalmi? Rashi says, if you're in Tel Aviv on Thursday, you have to observe Purim on Thursday. If you're in Yerushalayim on Friday, you have to observe Purim in Yerushalayim. But it makes no sense to read. And therefore, even though the language of the Gemara sounded like it was saying that, Rashi couldn't accept that idea. But the Rush says Rashi's wrong. And in fact, that is what the Gemara is saying. I don't care where you are on Friday morning. I care where you are on Thursday morning. And being in Yerushalayim when it's not Purim in Yerushalayim would make you obligated, even though you're not there. Why? Says the Rush. I'll explain to you why. Kevan shehu bikrach bizman kriyat b'nei iro. Since on Thursday morning, when they're reading the Megillah in Tel Aviv, he's not there. It's not just that he's not in Tel Aviv, of course. It's that he's not in an unwalled city, but rather in a walled city. The nistalek me'alav chovat mekomo, hakorim b'yom yudalid, v'karina be'mukaf ben yomo. He says like this. Purim is on the 14th of Adar all over the world. The only people who don't read Megillah on the 14th of Adar are the people who live in Yerushalayim or places like it. He's a Tel Avivi. He's a Parus. He's a resident of an unwalled city. He should be observing Purim on the 14th. If on the day that he should be observing Purim, he's in a place when they're not observing Purim because it's Yerushalayim, that automatically pulls him out of that category and says, you're a Yerushalmi. And that's the determining factor. I don't care where you are tomorrow. If you didn't read Purim on the 14th because you were in Yerushalayim, that means you have to read Purim on the 15th, and I don't care at that point where you are. That's how the Rush understands. So now it turns out that what's going on here, it seems, it's going to get a little more complicated in a minute, but it seems that what's going on here is not complicated enough. It sounds like this. It sounds like this machloket between the Rashi and the Rush is how we view this concept. According to Rashi, perhaps, there are two separate mitzvot. There's a mitzvah called Purim Yudalid, let's say, that applies to anybody who's in an unwalled city on those days, the people who live there, but because of the pasuk, even if you are only there for that day, you're considered to live there. So there's a mitzvah that applies in most of the world called the prazot. And if you're there, you have to keep that mitzvah. There's a separate mitzvah that applies in the cities that are mukafin choma. If
If you're there, you have to keep that mitzvah. And therefore, if you're outside of Yerushalayim on the 14th, you have to keep Purim on the 14th. If you're inside Yerushalayim on the 15th, you have to keep Purim on the 15th. But the Rosh perhaps doesn't understand it that way. The Rosh says, no, there's only one mitzvah. The mitzvah is called Purim. What's the mitzvah? The mitzvah is to read the Megillah on the 14th, unless you happen to be a resident of a walled city. But everything is determined by what happens on Purim. Purim is on the 14th. If you're a Yerushalmi on the 14th, your mitzvah gets pushed off till the next day. But it's not a separate mitzvah. I don't care where you are on the 15th. I care where you are on the time. That's Purim. And Purim is on the 14th, except if you're a Yerushalmi. That's how the Rosh seems to understand. Everyone with me so far, or did I lose you already? Okay. So if this is true, so according to the Rosh, it's actually very simple. All I need to know is at least where you're planning to be. We'll talk in a minute about whether it actually matters where you're planning to be or where you actually are. But let's say that your plans work out the way you plan, the way they're supposed to. Okay? All I care about is where are you supposed to be on the morning of the 14th. I don't care where you live normally. I care where you're going to be that year. And if you're going to be outside Yerushalayim at that point, then you read on the 14th, regardless of where you are the next day. And if you're going to be in Yerushalayim at that point, then you read it on the 15th, regardless of where you are on the 15th. That's the Rosh. Easy. But according to Rashi, if we read it that way, that there's two separate mitzvot, so if someone is in Tel Aviv on both days, so fine. Regardless of where they live the rest of the year, they have to read it on the 14th. And if they're in Yerushalayim on both days, they have to read it in Yerushalayim. That's fine. But according to Rashi, we have to consider the following fascinating question. Is it possible to have to observe Purim twice? What if I go to Tel Aviv, regardless of where I live, on Wednesday night? I sleep over in Tel Aviv, or anywhere else for that matter, outside Jerusalem, on Wednesday night, and I wake up in Tel Aviv on Thursday morning. And so I observe Purim, right? I read the Megillah Wednesday night and Thursday morning, and I have to have a Suda, and Mishloach Manot, Matan, and Avyonim, etc. I do all my obligations, let's say. And then Thursday afternoon, I get in my car, if I haven't drunk too much of the Purim Suda, or I hire a taxi driver, or whatever it is, and I go to Yerushalayim. And all of a sudden, on Thursday night, I'm in Yerushalayim, and I'm sleeping over until Friday morning. Oh! According to Rashi, perhaps one can say, there's a mitzvah to observe Purim on the 14th outside Yerushalayim. I was obligated to do that mitzvah. And then if I'm in Yerushalayim on the 15th, I have to do it again. But if that's true, then one can consider even an even more bizarre scenario of a person who could be completely miss Purim altogether. Because what happens if he's in the opposite situation? What if he goes Wednesday night to Yerushalayim, wakes up in Yerushalayim Thursday morning? According to Rashi, there's no obligation to Purim here, so he's not. Right, he's not obligated to Purim. So if he's going to stay over until Friday morning, he'll observe Purim in Yerushalayim on Friday morning, but then he winds up and goes back to Tel Aviv. I had a friend that happened to, without planning to, many years ago. He's around my age, a little younger than I am, but back when our kids were young, his first child was born, actually. His first child, he lives in Olam Shvut like me, which is like Tel Aviv outside Yerushalayim, but the closest hospitals, of course, are in Yerushalayim. And it wound up, his wife went into labor, and they went to Yerushalayim, and they were in Yerushalayim on the 14th. And he wasn't thinking at that point, his first child was being born, he wasn't thinking about any of this stuff. Turns out he went back home, and he was back in Olam Shvut on the 15th, and by the time he realized what was going on, he wasn't sure what to do. But in the end, he didn't, I don't think he read the Megillah at all that year, but afterwards he asked, what should he have done? Right? And it could be that he had no obligation at all, because he missed Purim completely. Is that what's going on? What?
Just according to Rashi.
So, at the very least, the Yerushalmi, the Talmud Yerushalmi, which is actually quoted by the Ramban in the back of this page, but I don't think I'm going to read it inside, but the Yerushalmi actually says that. Says that you can have a situation where, or at least pretty clear the Yerushalmi says that, that you can have a situation where you're chayav to observe Purim twice, and you could also have a situation where you completely miss Purim altogether. In other words, essentially there really are two completely separate mitzvot. And in principle, everyone does one or the other, but you could have a situation that a person could have to do it both, and you could also have a situation where a person could miss it entirely. But not everyone agrees that that's what Rashi's saying. Yerushalmi says that, and it sounds like that's what Rashi's saying, but it doesn't have to be that way.
Because what did Rashi say? Rashi said that if the guy from Tel Aviv goes to Yerushalayim, we don't ask him, are you planning to stay over till the 14th in the morning? We ask him if he's planning to stay over till the 15th. So it could mean that what Rashi understands is that there's two completely separate mitzvot, but maybe not. Maybe what Rashi's saying is like this. If you live in Tel Aviv, then in principle, you're a Parvus, you're a Tel Avivi, your Purim is on the 14th. The only way that you will lose your status as being a resident of Tel Aviv would be if you stay in Yerushalayim until the 15th. But it could be what Rashi's saying, which is not what the Yerushalmi said, but it could be what Rashi's saying, is that if you go from Tel Aviv to Yerushalayim and stay over until the 14th, but you're not planning to stay over until the 15th, so then you don't become a Yerushalmi, but that means you're still a Tel Aviv. And then you would have to read Purim, read the Megillah in Yerushalayim on the 14th. Meaning, it's possible that Rashi is an in-between position between the Rush and the Yerushalmi, let's say. The Rush says, all I care about is where are you on the 14th. The Yerushalmi says, if you're outside on the 14th, you read on the 14th. If you're inside on the 15th, you read on the 15th. And you could also have both, and you could also have neither. Rashi might be an in-between position. And this is what some Rishonim say. And that is, that if you, in principle, if you're a person who lives outside Yerushalayim, then you observe Purim on the 14th, unless you're going to be in Yerushalayim all the way till the 15th. In such a case, if you go to Yerushalayim for both nights, then you switch your status to being a Yerushalmi. Otherwise, you stay who you are and meet on the 14th. If that's true, then even according to Rashi, there's no two Purims, and there's no zero Purims either. It's one or the other. So these are the three possible ways of reading this Gemara. In a minute, I'll talk to you about what we do halacha l'maaseh. But let me just first address one other point. Just turn over briefly to the second side of the page. The Rif, when he quotes this Gemara, the Rif says, if you look at the actual text of the Gemara, or actually the Mishnah says, a very strange language, I'm sorry, let's just go back and look at the Mishnah itself again. The Mishnah says, Ben ir shehalach lekrach, uben krach shehalach leir, im atid likro kimkomo kore kimkomo. It all matters on what he's going to do. Right? And Rava said that means what he's going to do that night. So again, let's say the Yerushalmi goes to Tel Aviv, shows up in Tel Aviv, you know, Wednesday night, suddenly realizes everyone's reading the Megillah, picks up the phone, calls his rabbi, who answers his phone, because the rabbi's in Yerushalayim, it's not Purim. He says, Rabbi, what do? I'm in Tel Aviv right now, and they're all reading the Megillah. So the rabbi asks him, well, when are you planning to come home? So if he says, Rabbi, I'm coming home at 11 o'clock tonight, the rabbi says, so go have coffee, you don't have to hear the Megillah. But if he says, Rabbi, I'm sleeping over, I booked a hotel room, or I'm staying at my friend's house, I'm coming back only tomorrow afternoon, the rabbi says, get over to that shul and hear the Megillah now. That's what the Mishnah says. But why does the Mishnah use that language of what you're going to do? So look at the Rif. The Rif says like this. Ben ir shehalach likrach. Amar Rava lo shanu ela she'atid lachzor b'leil yudalid. He was planning to go back that night. V'nit akev v'lo chazar. But then he got stuck and didn't go back. In other words, according to the Rif, it sounds like the guy calls up his rabbi in Tel Aviv, from Tel Aviv, and says, Rabbi, I'm in Tel Aviv, what do? They're reading the Megillah. The rabbi says, what time are you coming home? He says, I'm coming home 11 o'clock tonight. The rabbi says, no problem, you don't have to hear the Megillah. But then what happens? The guy gets into his car at 11 o'clock at night to go home. Car broke down. Can't get home. He calls for a tow truck. It's Purim in Tel Aviv. Nobody's coming. He's stuck all night. Can't do anything. Up all night long. Till the guy comes, it's 10 o'clock in the morning. Finally, they get the car started. He calls the rabbi again and says, Rabbi, guess what? I'm still in Tel Aviv. Okay, last night's too gone already. But what do I do now? I'm here already. It's morning. So the rabbi says to him, according to the Rif, If you would have told me last night that you were planning to stay over, I would have told you we have to hear the Megillah at night and again in the day. I would have told you that you became a Paruz Ben Yomo because you were going to be in Tel Aviv that morning. And it turns out you were in Tel Aviv in the morning, but you weren't planning to be. So then, according to the Rif, it sounds like you don't have to observe Purim. It all matters what you were planning to do, not what actually happened. The Baal Hamor, I won't read it inside, but the next source here on the sheet, he says, well, that makes no sense. If it matters where you are, it matters where you are. Meaning, when the Mishnah said, it matters what you're planning, the Mishnah was only talking about what the rabbi should tell him when you call him up. Right? You call him up and say, Rabbi, do I have to hear the Megillah tonight? The rabbi will say, what's your plan? He says, I'm planning to come home tonight. So then fine. Then you don't have to hear the Megillah. Ah, but then the car breaks down and you call him the next morning. He says, okay, you really should have heard the Megillah. Now we know that you should have heard the Megillah last night. You couldn't. Okay, fine. That's not your fault. But now that you're in Tel Aviv, don't come home. Go hear the Megillah. Have a Suda. Mishloach Mano. Matan Levyonim. And then come home. That's what the Baal Hamor says. But the Ramban says, no. The Rif means what he means. And it all is determined by your intention. You only become a Paruz. You only become considered halachically a resident of that city if you're there on purpose. If you were planning to come home, but you got stuck because your car broke down, that doesn't count. Okay, so with all that, we now have the following questions. Do I hold like the Rush, which is that all I care about is where you are on the 14th? Do I hold like the Rishalmi, which is I care where you are on the 14th and on the 15th, and in theory you could have to observe Purim in one place or in the other place or in both places or in neither place? Or do I hold like the way some understand Rashi, which is something in the middle there where it depends on if where you started and are you planning to stay or not planning to stay like we were talking about before? That's one set of questions. And the other question is, does it matter only where you physically are? Or does it matter what your intention was first? In other words, this machlok that we were just talking about. What's the bottom line? The answer is, like most things, it's a machloket. It's not clear. The Shulchan Aruch seems to paskin, not like the Rush. Meaning, the Shulchan Aruch says that, I'll read the Shulchan Aruch. We'll close it a little early. I'll be finished in 5 minutes, and I'll just tell my little void and we'll close. The Shulchan Aruch says, Simon Tafresh Pechetz if hey, Ben Ir Shahalach le Krach, O Ben Krach Shahalach le Ir, Im Haya Dato Lachzor Lim Komo Bizman Kriya, if he was planning to go back to his place at the time that they're going to read there, Venitake Velo Chazar, and even if he didn't go back, Kore Kim Komo, he goes by his own place, meaning he holds like the Rif and the Ramban, that if the car breaks down and you got stuck, it doesn't matter. It only matters what your intention was. But if he was planning to stay over, then he reads like the place where he is. And it sounds like he's talking about in both directions. Therefore, we hold the following. If the guy's from Yerushalayim and he's going to Tel Aviv, we ask him, what's your plan? If his plan is to go back home that night, then he reads in Yerushalayim on the 15th. If he gets stuck in Tel Aviv, doesn't matter. But if he's planning Meirosh, he goes there planning to sleep over, so then he has to read it in Tel Aviv. And the person the other way, and if he's planning to go at least for both days to Yerushalayim, at least, then we tell him to read that way. What about someone who's going in both directions or whatever? Someone, can you have to observe Purim twice? This is a machloka between Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says you have to observe Purim twice. Rav Shlomo Frank says you don't. But most people that I know have followed Rav Shlomo Zalman, and it's a very popular thing among like yeshiva students, stuff like that, to try to do this. I always say, if you have to observe one of our holidays twice, so Purim's not a bad one. I never, I don't know anyone who wants to do two Tisha B'Av, but if you have to, or two Yom Kippurs, or even two Pesachs, but two Purims, yeah.
Reading Ahanisim on those occasions, you have to read it twice then.
So what Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach holds is that if you're outside Yerushalayim on the morning of the 14th and inside Yerushalayim on the morning of the 15th, you have to observe all the laws of Purim both days. That means hear the Megillah four times, in theory with a bracha, meaning you could even theoretically, according to him, make a bracha yourself on all of them, and you say Al Anisim both days, and you have to have give Mishloach Manot and Matanot Levyonim on both days, and you have to also eat the Sudas Purim twice. By the way, for Matanot Levyonim, this is also very important, the rabbis say, you have to give Matanot Levyonim on the day that it's Purim for you, and the person who receives the money has to be observing Purim that day also. Meaning, if I live outside Yerushalayim, so typically, a lot of times people don't necessarily think they're going to see an actual poor person to give the money, so it's very common to give money in advance to a rabbi or some organization, right? That's probably what you do here also. The people collect money in advance of Purim, and you make them a shaliach, and they promise to give out the money on Purim, right? Okay, but in Eretz Yisrael, you got to be careful. Meaning, if I live outside Yerushalayim, I can't give my money, I can give tzedakah. But if someone's collecting money to give to Aniyim in Yerushalayim on the 15th, and I give the money to him, and he's going to give it out in Yerushalayim on the 15th, I'm not going to be Yotze. I have to make sure, first of all, that it's going to be given on the day that's Purim for me. And not only that, but the guy who's giving out the money has to make sure that the people getting the money, right? The poor people, oh, they're giving out money, right? But if the guy doesn't live in Yerushalayim, and you give him Matanot Levyonim on the 15th in Yerushalayim, even though the money was given in Yerushalayim on Purim, but if the guy who receives it, it's not observing Purim, then you're not Yotzei the Mitzvah. So they have to check this out. And all the organizations that collect, they tell you, we're giving it out on this day and to these people, and you have to make sure. So the bottom line is that we hold at least L'chumra. I don't know if people would actually make brachos, but at least L'chumra people follow Rav Shlomo Zalman, and some I know many yeshiva students who have and others who have intentionally done this in order to have the chavaya of two Purims. What to do if you actually miss Purim, like the situation my friend was in? The general psak is don't be in that situation. But if one finds oneself in such a situation, it's not clear what to do. My friend asked a posek what to do, but it's not. He wasn't clear actually what the posek said, so we can't quote it because I asked him afterwards, and it's not clear. But it's a very serious question, and it's quite possible at least that according to some opinions, definitely according to Yerushalmi, that he would simply not be able to observe Purim at all. So these are the things that, as I said at the outset, here in London, this is a very interesting theoretical question, but in Eretz Yisrael, this really comes up all the time, and it's very, very practical relevance. I'll close with just one 90-second of our Torah. Why do this? Why did the rabbis create, first of all, this huge balagan, right? All these crazy scenarios coming up. But also philosophically, don't we Jews believe that we're all one nation? And if we're... I understand that the people in Shushan fought one day... Don't we believe in solidarity? Like, why don't we all celebrate on the 15th? Everybody, that year I understand. The first year, okay, no one knew what was going on. The people all over the kingdom, right, they observed Purim one day, but in Shushan they still had to fight. No one else knew, beside there. But years later, when we're enacting a commemoration, shouldn't we just all do it on the 15th? The war wasn't over until the war wasn't over, right? What's this idea of dividing us up don't we believe that we're all one nation? So I just have one idea I want to share. This I'll close. But my Rosh Hashiva, Rav Yudha Mital, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha, once pointed out that when fighting Amalek, the first time we fought Amalek, we read about it, it's the Kriyat HaTorah on Purim morning, right? In the time of Moshe Rabbeinu and Yoshua, right? Amalek attacked right after we came out of Mitzrayim, and they fought the war, Moshe went up, he held up his hands, right? And what does it say there? It says, Vayachalosh Yehoshua et Amalek lefi charev. Yehoshua weakened Amalek. He weakened him, but he didn't defeat him. He defeated him for now. The attack was repelled, the danger was over, but he didn't defeat Amalek. And if you don't defeat Amalek, Amalek come back to fight another day. What happened in the time of Shaul? Shaul was supposed to wipe out Amalek, and he almost did. He killed every person except one man, the king Agag. And a few animals. And Navi Shmuel came to him and said, you didn't do the mitzvah. This is the Haftarah that we read on Parshat Zachor. You didn't do the mitzvah. He says, what do you mean? Right? And what happened ultimately? Agag, later on, has a descendant, Haman HaAgagi. Right? Amalek has to be fought to the end. What was Esther's point? Think about it for a second. We now know that they killed, on the first day, a total of 75,500 people. Right? 75,000 outside of Shushan, another 500 in Shushan. And Esther said, I need another day because why? Because there's 300 people left. What's those 300 people going to be a threat? Perhaps Esther's point was, no, this time we have to finish the job. Adasof. And perhaps, the idea of Shushan Purim is in order to enshrine the memory of that decision and cause us to remember that when fighting Amalek, it's not enough to almost win. You've got to go all the way to the end. Now, where you take this, if some people want to take this and draw parallels to contemporary politics and military situations, you can go there if you want. But perhaps also we can take it to a very different place. And the battle against Amalek is viewed in Sifrei Musar and other things as a metaphor for the, or maybe not just a metaphor, but as a reflection of the spiritual battles against the forces of evil, against the Yetzer Hara, etc. And we were just talking earlier about the Midrashic idea, which is found in the Gemara, that Purim is a time of a renewed Kabbalat Torah, a renewed acceptance of the Torah. And the Hasidim talk about how Yom HaKippurim is only Kippurim, right? And Purim is even higher than that, which goes a little bit against what I said earlier, perhaps. But if so, perhaps, maybe that's the idea of Shushan Purim, to enshrine the memory of the fact that after all these attempts at just weakening Amalek, she insisted on an extra day to win the battle to the very end and to wipe out all vestiges of the evil. And maybe that's the message that this day is trying to send us. In any case, it's a fun topic and one that, as I said, has very, very interesting practical ramifications in Eretz Yisrael.